Good day from Wall Street. This is Jack Marks, senior analyst with Wall Street Reporter. Today I am speaking with Dr. Guy Chamberland. He's the CEO and chief scientific officer with Tetra Biopharma. Stock symbol is TBP on the TSX and TBPMF over the counter. Dr. Chamberland, you've just been appointed the permanent CEO of Tetra, so congratulations.
Well, thank you very much, Jack, and it's a pleasure to be on your show today.
Yes, welcome. So, Tetra is a cannabinoid-based drug development company. So tell us about some of the products you're developing in your pipeline and the markets they address.
Okay. Well, in a simple explanation, Tetra Biopharma is basically a company similar to GW Pharma. The big difference is that we're developing a series of drugs for the pain market. So we have mainly five drugs right now that are under development for the human prescription drug market. So we have one drug for terminal cancer for people with basically with malignant advanced cancer. It's an inhaled drug. Then we have one that we just announced completing type B's and type C meetings with the US FDA. So the path now for what we call the PP02 product is cleared to basically filing the new drug application in the US. We just need to finish the studies that we've agreed to do with the FDA, but there are no more, can I say, obstacles. The path has been cleared. The PP03 is the ocular. We're actually kind of alone in this world. We have very strong intellectual property on both formulations and applications for treating eye pain, eye inflammatory disease, and even going after painful dry eye. So that's going to be a very unique area for the company. We even have some non-scheduled cannabinoids, which means they won't end up being, managed through the Drug Enforcement Agency. We'll just be able to do them as a regular drug in the U.S. Then we have a topical line, and we have our oral line where we're working on basically various innovative formulations to increase the bioavailability so that basically we can get higher doses to treat pain in patients. So that was in a summary of what we are developing.
That's so. And what are the markets, the size of the markets that you're going after?
Well, almost each of the pain markets are each over a couple of billion dollars. So total Tetra Biopharma is positioned to have a potential, if we're successful in every single one, we're looking at about a $50 billion market. That's the advantage of being in pain. Pain is not an orphan drug market, so it's a very huge market. I mean, single drugs, like something like Lyrica, sells for about $5 billion. So, I mean, if you can just steal chunks of that from the market because our safety is much better and our tolerance is much better, I mean, you can see the ability of a company like Tetra to go and become a significant player in the pain market.
So what are the key differentiators between, cannabis-based versus, traditional pharma products?
Well, we're a pharma company, so from, procedures and the regulations and everything that we do is the same. What really makes a cannabis pharma different is the fact that we have to deal with a Schedule I substance. So we have basically imposed on us all of the controls that stem from basically being a Schedule I, so working with a Drug Enforcement Agency in the States, working in Canada with the body that basically does the same job as a DA in protecting diversion of our products and that. That's basically the challenge. And then obviously for us is always looking at getting products so they're easily accessible by patients. So we look at, obviously we're concerned about potential of abusing our formulations. So that's things that we take seriously, and we try and control them with various devices so that we protect the consumer and allow them to get access to very, innovative and promising medications.
Okay. Well, I mean, but in terms of like efficacy or in terms of using the product, what are the main...
Well, I think what people are going to be really surprised is the potential of a cannabis based therapy. And I'll give you the example. One of our products, the inhalation, is head-to-head in the clinical trial versus fentanyl. And, you know, first reaction of people is like, well, fentanyl is a powerful opioid. And my first reaction is that of a scientist. And I look at them, yes, it may be powerful, but it takes a lot of time before it relieves the pain in the patient. The sublingual fentanyl can take anywhere from 20 to 60 minutes before we get relief in the patient. It's addictive. It has the dangers being an opioid that as you escalate the doses that you can get respiratory depression. I don't have the side effects of that type of molecule. I can escalate the doses of even THC, and I won't risk the respiratory depression in patients. So from a safety point of view, we've been able to show in healthy volunteers that if we administer it adequately with the right titration strategy, we have a very, very tolerable product for patients, which is key, because if you're in severe pain, you don't want to stop taking a medication because it's making you more sick. So with the cannabis, we were able to show in healthy volunteers that we were able actually to administer it in a very tolerable profile to a patient. And the fact that it acts in 2 to 3 minutes in the patient, they don't need to wait the 20 to 60 minutes to get the relief from fentanyl. I think that's going to be a game changer for us, because the moment we'll prove that in a randomized double-blind trial, which is the standard of the pharmaceutical industry, I think people are going to really see that we're a serious player in the opioid reduction market.
So, and this is, so I think you're talking about now about the, so this is the smokable cannabis product that you have for
for terminal cancer, and what we've been able to show in healthy volunteers, and we've discussed this with the FDA, we've discussed this with Health Canada, so we're looking at a patient population that's obviously with malignant cancer, but what's key for these patients is getting them fast relief, and when it's adequately and safely administered, it's very, very tolerable. We're not talking about, say, going after arthritis with a smokable product. That we're working with a manufacturer in Germany, Sturzenbickel, where we're trying to develop with their vaporizer to bring the same drug, PP01, to these patients with the vaporizer. But that we're just about to start a phase one in healthy volunteers with the vaporizer. In each case, what we have to do, because we're a pharma, so we characterize a complete profile of what's in the smoke, so that we've done. Now we've completed it for the vaporizer, because if you're coming into my trial in a formal, say, FDA pharmaceutical type trial, I have to consent you to the risk. So I have to know what these risks are. So in our company, we've obviously characterized now the vapors, and I can tell you as a volunteer, these are the potential risks if you consume with a vaporizer, you know, the cannabis product. And that's what differentiates us, say, from many licensed producers, the marijuana companies that run what they call observational studies, whereas you kind of people buy the drug and then they ask them questions on the efficacy. For us, it's randomized with placebos. We have ethics review. We have FDA and Health Canada approvals. That's really what makes us very distinct from the cannabis companies and makes us more like a GW Pharma.
And, okay, so, but in terms of the results, so this the smokable cannabis, what is it, PPP-001, you're calling it, what, so it delivers the same results as fentanyl, but essentially is safer and works faster?
It's going to be much faster. It's going to achieve it in about 2 to 4 minutes. Yeah, so time to relief is going to be significant. And a patient who has breakthrough pain, so breakthrough pain is kind of like a cancer patient who has normal pain all the time, but he's on opioids to relieve what we'll call the background pain. But once in a while, they're going to get these flares up of a very, very severe acute pain. And the current medications they're on don't reduce that. So that's where you'll prescribe something like sublingual fentanyl. So when they get that spike in acute pain, you'll give them the fentanyl. Now, what happens after, say, 10, 15 minutes, if they're not relieved, they'll pop another one. And that's where you get the risks of overdoses. Whereas with the cannabis, and at least in healthy volunteers, where we showed to Health Canada our hypothesis, is that we're showing a very fast time to release with the THC, which is really key. And if we can actually achieve that in these patients, we're going to bring to them a very significant alternative for managing breakthrough pain. And this is key, because now if you can give them a safer drug, even if they take 2 or 3 during the day, we've been able to show that they'll tolerate it very well and they're not at risk of overdosing. So, I mean, from a, even if I turned out to be, say, the same efficacy as fentanyl, on the safety side, I'm going to be very superior because I'm going to be a very tolerable drug.
Now, you're in phase three clinical trials for this.
Yeah, in phase three clinical trials and in phase two versus fentanyl.
Okay.
Two different trials.
Is there a difference in the FDA approval process for, you know, cannabinoid versus traditional drugs?
Not from the FDA's point of view. Obviously, I have unique things to address from the point of view of potential, you know, drug abuse to the FDA. But then afterwards, it's, if I'm opening a clinical site in the U.S., then it's getting, being sure the site is licensed from the Drug Enforcement Agency, and same with the physician and, say, the pharmacist. But I have that in Canada as well. So for me, there's no real difference from a regulatory point of view, whether I do it in Canada or the U.S., because I need the same from Canada. I can't work with a physician or a pharmacy and put my drugs there if they don't have the licenses from Health Canada to receive a Schedule I substance. So there's no real difference. But what's unique to the people who developed back then, say, morphine the first time, these were Schedule I. So pharmas that are specialized in narcotics, there's nothing new to them. This is the classic way of doing drug development. And we've adhered, even in Europe, we're targeting the classic drug path that has been proven for decades to work to bring products to patients.
And from what I understand, you are planning to file an NDA in the first quarter of next year, of 2019.
Correct. And yeah, we also have had some orphan drug approvals from from the FDA, so they've granted us our first orphan drug status for our cannabinoid products, and you'll see the company will continuously develop THC products, THC CBD products, and although some others, say small biotechs, are trying to specialize with CBD, we're always going to be because we're in the pain sector, we're always going to be working with THC, and I think that's another area that's going to make Tetra really differentiate itself from anybody else who's going to go out there. And the reason for that is basically THC has some, how can I say, unique challenges to them, but we've been now at it since 2016 on the regulatory front, so we now have obviously shown the agencies that we know how to work with these, and we now have obviously established procedures with them into getting our products approved.
Okay. And what is, so when do you expect to actually, or when do you hope to see the product actually start sales?
Well, in the pharma, people usually don't understand that, so hopefully I'll explain it well so the potential buyers of stock will understand. So recently we explained that here in Canada we obtained the drug establishment license. That's kind of like the license to manufacture your commercial drug. You cannot manufacture a commercial drug or even prepare the commercial lot that you need to file your marketing application if you don't have that license. And so that Health Canada granted to us. It was the first time actually Health Canada grants such a license even for a botanical drug. Now it's not just a botanical drug. It was a cannabis botanical drug. So that was a major, I guess, accomplishment for us. And that obviously even for the FDA is significant because that's the same thing as, say, the US FDA's GMP approval, say, from the FDA. Obviously, the FDA would have to come visit us. But that, to me, was my biggest challenge because the drug will basically prove itself or not versus placebo. But if you can't commercially manufacture your drug, there's no way FDA or any other regulatory body is going to approve your drug. So for me, that was the key stepping stone to getting to the market. The rest is just running the trial, getting all the patients in, filing the reports. But the challenge was really getting ready for commercialization. That's why if you look over the last 6 months, the people the company had been hired, it's always been focused on preparing for commercialization, so pre-commercial activities, getting ready to put together what we call the common technical document, which is the international format, say, for filing a new drug application. So all of this has been prepared and ongoing with the company as we prepare for 219.
So again, like when do you expect the first sales to happen?
Well, the first sales, usually after we file, some physicians begin. It's a slow process. So the other thing we announced, we hired a vice president of marketing. He comes from, he spent 32 years with Big Pharma preparing product launches. So now what we're structuring is basically the table for selling. So now what we're going to be doing across North America is preparing what we call the key opinion leaders, start to educate them on our drugs, and hopefully get them to begin to, you know, prescribe it. And even though if it's a limited amount because it's not yet approved, so for example, in the States, there's the Right to Try Act. So with the Right to Try Act, a key opinion leader can begin to try our drug to see, you know, if it's doing what we're claiming it's doing. And over time, as these key opinion leaders get comfortable prescribing your drug, when you get ready to, officially begin to promote it, then you already have people that are familiar with your drug, so then you can pick up the sales very rapid. So we expect the pickup to begin probably by Q4 of 2019.
Okay, so at the end of next year, we could start to see revenues coming in. Okay. Now, this Right to Try Act, I mean, essentially that will, you know, for this product, it's anybody who has, it's basically your target market is terminal cancer. So automatically, your target market
Right to Try Act
can immediately start.
To qualify, you could say, for the Right to Try Act, and it's about this year, we have an equivalent program here in Canada. So what the regulators want to see is that you actually have safety data, so it's not something that's off the shelf. So in the case of a company like Tetra with our PP01, for example, we have clinical data, very significant clinical data. So we've demonstrated the safety. We know the pharmacokinetics. We've demonstrated pharmacodynamics. So if a physician wants to use it for compassionate reasons for a patient, which is where the Right to Try Act comes, then they can use that to get it to their patients. But if you have not completed, for example, what we call the phase one clinical trial, you won't qualify for the Right to Try Act, because it's not to give companies an alternative to market. It's to make it available. But the population we're dealing with is, you know, a major people with malignant cancer is a population that right now they can't get anything. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see as we begin to work with key opinion leaders how much pickup there will be in that area.
Okay. Now, what differentiates your product from, let's say, traditional medicinal cannabis? What's the main difference?
Well, there are multiple differences. From a product point of view, is we control the quality, so we meet the same quality as any other prescription drug, and that includes, you know, making sure there's no impurities. But the key part, if you're a physician, from a quality point of view, is not just saying, okay, it's 100% pure type of thing. It's knowing when I put a patient on a drug that every month that patient is going to get the same level of drug. So I'm not going to see kind of a merry-go-round type of an effect, or, you know, kind of a roller coaster with the efficacy. I'm not going to see the person lose their efficacy in January, regain it in February, end up in the hospital because of an overdose the other month. So what you expect for a synthetic drug, for example, is about from pill to pill, is about a 3% variation when you go from a batch to the next batch of pills. For a biologic type material, you can be allowed up to 10% variation, which is not that much. For our product right now, we're at 4%, which is very good for a biological material, like a botanical drug. So that means every time over a year, you will just see a variation of about 4% in the amounts of THC, CBD being given to the patient. So you can be sure your patient's on a steady amount of drug. And that's key in balancing a patient and ensuring they're stable. Because many times when people change brands on the market, they end up getting, say, a different level of the active ingredient. They end up either with headaches or different side effects. So, you know, they don't like it, or the opposite, there's less in it and you lose the efficacy. And that's the importance of a pharmaceutical GMP. And that's where, again, our team that we put in place over the last 6 to 9 months is key to getting this quality system in place. I'd say that's the key differentiator between what will be available in the medical cannabis market versus the pharmaceutical market.
Okay. Now, can you share with us, you know, your background and also some of the key members of the team?
Sure. So my background, I've been developing new drugs since 1995, so taking various products from discovery, bringing them into first in human after convincing, say, FDA and Health Canada that we basically did our homework and we know what the risks are to healthy volunteers, and then basically working with the agencies and bringing the products either to the market or killing them because they were no good drugs. So I've been doing that since 1995. This is not my first botanical drug, so I'm used to the challenge of working with a biological material. And the people we have inside, so as a company, I looked for people that were, how could I say, honestly, team players, but I also wanted people that weren't afraid to move forward and were used to building companies. And that's key because obviously we're doing something unique, so I don't want somebody who's going to be, you know, kind of a, at the end of their career type of thing waiting for, you know, the paychecks. I want people who are drivers, and that's what I brought in. So on the manufacturing side, we brought in our vice president of compliance and basically quality assurance, who came from big pharmaceutical companies, and he's been driving the quality of what we needed, and he's achieved basically what we needed to achieve is get our drug establishment license. On the marketing side, we needed to prepare. Obviously, we're a company who's going to base our revenues on not selling directly, but getting into a partnership with a pharma and being able to basically, we want the royalties coming into our, you know, bank account as soon as possible. So if I wait to hand them, how can I say, the ball to start selling, and I didn't prepare the territory, ensure the reimbursement there from insurers, then I'm wasting time to get my royalties. So that's, he's building all that platform. So the day we hand the ball, these companies can begin to generate revenues for us. And on the research side, we have a very strong research team. They basically manage our projects. They're all PhDs, very, how can I say, solid in the understanding of the cannabinoid pharmacology and overall chemistry and, you know, science of, say, pharmaceutical preparations. We work with formulation specialists. We have researchers, and we also have a very strong clinical group to manage our clinical trials, and then people on the regulatory side to put together our applications, prepare the data that FDA and, you know, Health Canada want and need, and basically file them. And then on more on the administrative side, we obviously have a CFO, and we have a executive vice president of corporate affairs for doing business development, licensing agreements, and obviously being a public company, making sure when we have to, we keep the investors, I got to say, up to date on everything we're doing. So that's, in a very rapid overview, that's who Tetra is. And we're very lean. So we believe in a virtual model, so we won't invest in creating labs that we don't need.
Okay. And who are some of your partners now on the various products that you have in the pipeline?
So our partners we have for the PP01, we work with Aphria. So Aphria manufactures what we call the active pharmaceutical ingredient. So they grow the strains for us, and they do this under a GMP that meets the FDA requirements, Health Canada's requirement, and the European agencies. Then that's transferred to another facility in New Brunswick where they convert it to the finished product, and that's the area where we got a drug establishment license. So the plant basically goes from Aphria straight to that facility, which is a contracted facility that we basically manage, and then they convert it to the finished product, and then that goes to one of two clinical areas. We work heavily with Alta Sciences, which is an international firm that does clinical research. So all our studies with healthy volunteers is done with them. They manage a lot of the blood analysis, even for our phase 2 and phase 3 trials. Then we work very closely with a group that's called Santé Cannabis. They're basically a private medical cannabis clinic, and several physicians from McGill University work there. Our principal investigators are professors from McGill that also have basically their clinic for patients over there. And that was a key asset for us, because managing a patient on a cannabis drug is important. Now, I don't want to make it unique to cannabis, but I think one of the failures when physicians prescribe, for example, SSRIs, the antidepressants, is they don't handhold the patient's hand. And each person is different. So if I put you, for example, on an antidepressant, some people won't tolerate it. They'll get dizziness. They'll get various side effects, and all, if they call their physician, the psychiatrist, all they're going to tell them is, well, try and, you know, take it another week, eventually you'll start to tolerate the drug. But most people don't have access to, you know, these physicians on a daily basis. So if you don't have educators and people trained to hold the hand of the patient, you actually, in my opinion, the patient will stop it because they don't tolerate it, but you actually deny the patient the potential of an effective drug. So we worked with Santé Cannabis to develop a model of, I'll call it, hand-holding the patient, and it's the patient care, and I think that's going to make the difference. And as we hold the patient's hand, eventually we don't need to hold it anymore because now they're on it and, you know, it works. So that, for us, was a major success with this this private clinic. And then we work with IntelGenx for the PP02, where we license their drug formulation technology to get a patent-protected sustained release for buccal administration. And then we licensed all our ocular technology from Panag Pharma, which is a basically university-based biotech company. And that's basically who our partners are. And as we grow, we're always looking for innovative and strategic partners.
Okay. And what about, you also have a over-the-counter and veterinary product line, product pipeline that you're developing?
Yes. On the veterinary side, our approach has been, well, we've invested money in creating drugs like, say, the PP05, and the PP03, and our approach has been, okay, now we've made these, maybe we can expand our potential revenues by targeting pets as well. Pets have the same, you know, diseases as humans. They get cancer. People invest on pain for stopping the nausea in their dogs, treating the pain, and also ocular, you know, inflammatory conditions and that. So these are, we're bringing some of these products basically for dogs and cats. So that's the veterinary side that's coming. On the, basically, let's call it, on the over-the-counter retail type business that we grew that business, we brought in Richard Giguet, who basically came from a major pharmaceutical company that had retail, very strong national retail activities, to structure it and begin to leverage our science and bring wellness and, you know, healthcare products that are sold over-the-counter to consumers for what I call the self-care market, one that you don't need a prescription. It's obviously evidence-based again, so we leverage all the research that the pharma group does, and then we try and bring these into supplement-type products that we'll be able to sell through various partnerships. And we announced one very recently with Genical Corporations Canada, which is basically a, you know, Canadian equivalent, say, to a dietary supplement company that's very strong on the retail side in managing arthritic type pain and joint pain. They sell in 40 countries. So that's the type of partnerships we look for and we'll be able to leverage and drive sales. It's kind of a way we found for our shareholders that instead of seeing a pure, you know, classic biotech play, which is mainly just burn the money, is let's use some of our data and try and generate revenues while the pharma delivers on, I guess, the higher reward, which is a prescription drug.
And so the over-the-counter products, let me just be clear, are those, you didn't, when will you start selling those?
Hopefully very soon. We haven't actually given the dates, but we've hinted that things were coming in the very near future. Basically, we're working very highly with Genical, and we announced sometime in 2019 they would be launching the first one of two products on the market. And we're targeting basically their market, which is 40 countries.
Okay. So that's Seneca, S-E-N-E-C-A, yes?
Genical, G-E-N-A-C-O-L, and they're based here in Montreal.
Okay.
No, G as in George. Genical.
Genical. Okay. So you expect to launch two over-the-counter products with them next year.
Correct.
And again,
one
what
for
are the
topical care and the other for oral?
Okay.
Joint pain.
For joint pain. Okay. And the other product is a skin type of product.
Yeah. So the joint is one is the topical is basically be like a cream that you'll rub locally.
Oh, I see.
Relief.
Okay. Okay. Do you have any kind of projections on sales for the, for those products?
We don't. We know they do, and the way we've behaved on the market since I've become even the interim CEO is we're not going to commit to any sales. We prefer to surprise the market. And for us, we've adopted very conservative figures that when we present to both our shareholders and the board, we prefer to give them a positive supply than to do like some other players and overpromise. But we promise the market as we achieve sales milestones, we will be communicating that to them. And eventually once, because, I mean, it's challenging the first year to launch a new product and promise sales until you're actually in the store, seeing how it turns. It's really difficult. So I prefer to positively surprise our shareholders and eventually after a couple of months of being on the shelves, come back and say, well, now here's our predictions and our target for next year.
Okay. So what are the key milestones that investors should be looking at over the next 12 months?
They should be watching very closely what we've hinted at through our last two press releases in the U.S. with the PP02, so they should be watching that. If they go back over the couple of months and look at, obviously, our drug establishment license will allow us to export to other countries. So, and we also, issued a press release saying that we were looking at submitting an application in Europe for PP01. So basically, that's what they should be watching. You should basically be watching our foreign activities as a company as we go forward. As was suggested, typically, Tetra has always gone out to the market and what we have said we have done. So we have not gone out and made a promise that we're not delivering on.
Okay. And so what is the financial structure of the company look like now, and will you have any capital needs going forward in the next 12 to 18 months?
Well, when we achieved our last financing, which is in March, so we basically financed our operations to take us basically to the end of Q1 of 2019. So it's obvious at one point Tetra will have to, decide to go out and, raise more to finish the operations. But typically as a company, you want to deliver on what you've promised before you go back out to the market and raise money. But for right now, our burn is basically exactly as we had predicted. So we're on track.
Okay. What is the burn rate right now is how much?
The burn rate typical varies, obviously, depending on our clinical activities and what month. But obviously, if you look at the financials, it's probably, I think the last financial goes out tomorrow, so I have to be careful what I say because we're in our quarter. But I'll leave it for the news release.
Don't say anything.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I can say it. So.
Okay. So basically, investors can... They could look at your financials and see the
yep.
cash on hand
exactly.
and the burn rate. Okay, we'll leave it at that. To sum up, what are in your opinion, like what are the key value drivers that investors should take into account, when considering your stock, and what, why should they buy the stock essentially?
Well, I think it's at this stage, any biotech companies that's achieving the milestones we're achieving with the FDA and Health Canada, we're obviously showing clearly that the agencies are validating what we're doing and kind of showing there's a green light to the market. Obviously, you don't get the reward tomorrow morning like with any, biopharmaceutical or biotech stock. So you have to have a more patient investor than the guy who wants to make a quick buck and, kind of in the month or the years. But when we're getting these green lights from agencies, I think that should be a very positive signal to the market that at least what we're saying, what we're doing, is getting validated by the regulatory agencies like the U.S. FDA and Health Canada.
Well, Dr. Chamberlain, thank you very much. And we look forward to following your milestones in the months ahead.
Yes, it's been our pleasure to talk to you again.